Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hello, hello, and welcome back to When in Romance, where we get to talk about all things romance novels, Romancelandia, and all that stuff. I am Jess.
And I am Trisha.
And we are recording a little early on Tuesday, February 27th, 2024.
Indeed we are. We were going to record on the 29th. We were going to record on Leap Day.
Yeah.
Which I mention now because it might become relevant later on in the show. But regardless, by the time folks hear this, we will be past Leap Day and into March.
Yes, we will. And you'll be hearing this on the 4th of March, which is a friend of mine's birthday. Happy birthday, Bridget.
Oh, happy birthday, Bridget. which will also be the week that probably like our nation's greatest book festival is happening. It's my understanding.
Yes, it will be the week leading up to the Tucson Festival of Books, the third largest book festival in the country.
But the first best.
Absolutely the first best.
Yeah, particularly when it comes to romance representation, because Jessica Pryde has moved mountains over the course of the last few years to make it that way.
I've tried.
Indeed. Well, I know, I feel like for the last few episodes, Jess, your what are you reading has correlated to your author list. I don't know if that's the case today. What are you reading?
It does not correlate to the author list today. I was working on the Book Riot monthly new romances list.
Sure.
And there was this book on there that I just like I could not stop thinking about, and it turned out I had an arc for it, which is good because it doesn't come out until March 14th. And it's called The Boyfriend Subscription by Stephen Salvatore. And I know that that author has written YA books, but this is their first adult book. And I had been meaning to read something of theirs for years, and just reading the description, it made me just like, I could not stop thinking about it because it is loosely based on the plot of Pretty Woman, which is one of my all-time favorites.
Sure.
But gay. So, yeah. And like, I haven't been reading it for very long, so I don't know a whole lot about what is actually going to be happening. But you've got Teddy, who has just had to close his plant nursery down, and he's got to leave New York because he's out of money. He's gotten divorced. He's like been sued for something. And he's, you know, drowning his sorrows in the usual way. And he meets this guy who asks him to be his fake boyfriend for a week while he's trying to impress a potential investor. And, you know, you get to the no kissing and no falling in love, and you're like, ah, I see where this is going.
Sure. I don't know if you've gotten to there yet, but I'm going to go out on a limb and guess there's eventually kissing and maybe some falling in love.
I hope there's a piano involved, too. Probably
maybe
not.
Maybe like a shopping expedition of vengeance that, I don't know. I'm just saying. Who knows what might happen?
Who knows what might happen? But I'm really enjoying it so far. I have been having a tough time reading actual books for the past couple of weeks. Like, I've been reading a whole lot of fan fiction, as it were, and this one got me back into actually like picking up original works of art. Mm-hmm. So I'm I'm very glad that like the writing style meshed with my brain, and I hopefully will finish it.
I mean, fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed.
That's really the only way to get to the HEA is to get to the end of the book, usually.
Yeah, it really is.
I think it might be fake relationship week here on When in Romance because I am also reading a book in which one person is posing as another person's significant other. That book is Megan by Rebecca Witherspoon. It just came out maybe around Valentine's Day. So it's only been out for a couple of weeks. And it is one that we mentioned briefly, I think, after our books were mostly anticipated. Mostly anticipate the books we are most anticipating. We're not mostly anticipate, we're fully anticipating them in 2024. And this book, if you read or heard us talk about Rafe or Zenny, this is book three in that Loose End series. But if you've read anything by Rebecca Weatherspoon, there is a good chance that there is some connection to that series in this book. Pretty much every character that is in this book was a character in a former Rebecca Weatherspoon book, from So Sweet to the Fit trilogy, I don't remember which ones, to I think it's Haven, one of the Bears in Bondage series. Like these people are, this is the world, the Rebecca Weatherspoon world. And it is about, so Megan is about, well, Megan, obviously, and this tech billionaire named Olin, or maybe he's a millionaire, I don't know, who is, he's autistic. He is consistently getting sort of asked out by various women, sometimes men, who he frankly does not want to date because he knows that they only want to be with him because of his money and probably because he's a good-looking guy. And so he asks his friend Zenny, as mentioned in a previous book, if she knows anybody who could who he could pay to be like his fake girlfriend to take to these events so that he can not have to deal with all of these people trying to, you know, cozy up to him. And she recommends her friend Megan, who is a kindergarten teacher. Megan is up for it, and so they start doing this. They hit it off. And they talk about whether or not they might want to pursue a relationship, like a real relationship. And the main complicating factor, at least as far as Megan sees it, is that she is heavily into the BDSM community, including a particular club that that exists in LA. Most of her relationships over the course of the last decade or so have been kind of non-traditional, but they have been connected to this community. They have not been like exclusive romantic relationships like you think of, but they have been really emotionally important to her and often really devastating when they break off. Olin has not been involved kind of in this world, but he's interested and they're trying to figure out whether or not they might be able to make a go of it. It's very sweet. They're both very lovely, lovely characters. I will tell you, there's a lot of discussion about how BDSM works and how what the rules are and what you do to make sure that people are comfortable and how consent works. And it's interesting if you're looking for kind of like what a lens into that world looks like, this is certainly the book for that. It's also, as you might be imagining, pretty steamy. So, you know, so I'm probably halfway through so far, and it's very, very sweet, and the same sort of vein as Rafe and Zenny. I don't know if we're going to be dealing with a third act breakup. I think in one of those books there was one, and the other one there was not. So I'm kind of hoping there's not, because I prefer just to be able to like smooth sail the whole way. But either way, I'm all in. I'm all in. It's going well. So again, that's Megan by Rebecca Weatherspoon.
Awesome. And so what you're saying is that Rebecca Weatherspoon would be a great candidate for a Weatherspoon cinematic universe, right?
Oh,
Where since
yes.
everything is connected, we'd have
Yes.
a television show that could go on for like Grey's
Yes.
Anatomy number of seasons
Yeah.
because you just focus on one group.
Yeah. And then, like, you
Yeah.
could spin off to the Cowboys of California, who I think are probably connected into this book also, and I just don't know how yet. Like, we'll see. Yes, absolutely. I think you might even be able to, you know, sustain an entire streaming service just with the Rebecca Weatherspoon cinematic universe.
I think someone needs to take that on.
I mean, listen, whatever fan letters I need to write, I will happily write. Okay, before we get into main show and main discussion for the day, you want to talk a little bit about In the Club, Jess?
Absolutely. Do you want to make your book club the best club? Sign up for our In the Club newsletter. In the Club will deliver recommendations for the best books to discuss in your book clubs. From buzzy new releases to brilliant throwbacks, the books highlighted in this newsletter will drive your book club discussions. We'll also share some book club-friendly recipes and interesting bookish updates from all over. And if you become a paid subscriber, you get even more recommendations plus community features. In other words, we'll keep you well-met, well-read, and well-fed. Visit bookriot.com/in the club to sign up. That's bookriot.com/in the club.
That's interesting. I feel like well-met, well-read, well-fed might be a romance series. I feel like that might be a trilogy of some kind that I'm misremembering. Just have to join in the club and find out. I don't know. All right, let's take a quick break and then we're going to talk. We're jumping right in. We're going to talk about some books this week. Okay, so as I mentioned before, we were going to record on Leap Day, the 29th, and then we had a scheduling issue, so instead we're recording on the 27th. But we're still, you know, in the week of the Leap Day, which only comes every 4 years. Mm-hmm. And so I thought it might be fun, and luckily Jess agreed because she's great at humoring me, if we just spent the episode talking about books we love that came out in leap years, which I realized are also the years of the Summer Olympics usually.
Yeah, but I didn't even think about that.
Maybe we'll do this episode again in August. With a whole new set of books that came out in, you know, the leap years / Summer Olympic years. We'll see. Who knows? Whole different set of books. I don't know if you even care about leap year, Jess. Do you have any feelings about it?
You know, I often forget that leap years exist until it's a leap year. And then it's like, oh, cool, an extra day of Black History Month.
Nice. Or something like yeah. I like that. I think I actually am kind of the same. I think it's kind of like a fun thing that exists, mm-hmm. but also I don't sit around thinking, oh man, when is it going to be another leap year? I've really been waiting in the way that you might if like your birthday was February 29th.
Yeah.
But like I said, it's kind of a fun thing that exists and, you know, evens out our calendar every 4 years. Although apparently there's something called like a leap second or an atomic second. I don't know. All of the, like, atomic clocks are wrong. I read this the other internet rabbit hole. Search it out for yourselves. We're not a science podcast, as you might be able to tell by the fact that I can't even remember the name of the thing I'm talking about. But anyway, atomic seconds, confusing. Leap years, good. Hmm. That's what I have to say.
Yeah.
If that's even what they're called, I'm not sure. Jess, why don't we dive right in? We're going to go all recommendations this episode. What is your first leap year book choice?
Well, I wouldn't be me if I didn't come right out of the gate with a book or two by the great Miss Beverly Jenkins.
Who? It's not familiar.
And since she didn't have a book come out this year, we have to go back to 2016 with the release of Forbidden, the first book in her Old West trilogy. This one features a character, Ryan Montaigne, who had existed in a book that she had written over a decade before called Through the Storm. He was the sibling of one of the main characters in that book. And now he is living in Nevada, passing as white because he grew up enslaved and is probably the child of rape, and he can pass as white. And he meets Eddie on a road when she has like basically been driven out of her home and like is passed out in the desert. So he takes her in and helps to bring her back to health. And it is only then that he reveals to her that he is not a white man, but through the book, they, you know, there's the love story, and then there's this thing that he has to deal with about whether he wants to pass for the rest of his life, or if he wants to love the woman that he falls in love with and not, and be himself. So that one I absolutely loved, and it's forbidden. And like I mentioned, it's the first in a trilogy, which gets increasingly amazing. All three of those books are great. And as a bonus, if you are looking to read books that were written in leap years, you might also be able to pick up Indigo, which we haven't talked about at all on this podcast.
Again, it does not ring a bell.
That one was published in 1996, and I was trying to do math in my head, trying to figure out how a book that was written 10 years before Forbidden was also a leap year, and then I realized that it wasn't 10.
Yeah. Yeah, we are not a science podcast or a math podcast.
Or a math podcast.
Yeah, I think it's funny that you mention Indigo, because I mentioned it just before we started recording. When I was trying to find books, I was like, I'm going to go all the way back. I'm going to go to like 2004 or 2000. And as I kept going back in time, I was like, oh, they're the mainstream titles that were getting published before, I don't know, honestly, like 2010, 2012, were not exclusively, but largely pretty much the same in a lot of ways. And by the same, I mean, it was a lot of male-female couples. It was a lot of white authors. It was a lot of, you know, the same kind of typical romance that you think of. Again, not exclusively. There were some books that were more interesting, but I think that is why my list is pretty, there's a little bit of recency in it. I would say everything comes from the last 10 or 12 years. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if you found anything besides Indigo from the earlier, earlier than, you know, 2012, say, Jess, but I did not.
I was like, what was out in 1988? Yeah. And, you know, I'm going forward and it's like, well, I know that a very, very, like, not known at all, very unfamiliar book called The Duke and I came out in 2000. And that was like, that was the best I could do.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, mine are also, with the exception of Indigo, pretty recent.
Yeah, I think the one that of mine that went furthest back is a book called A Rogue by Any Other Name by Sarah McLean. Mm-hmm. And we've talked about Sarah's books a couple of times here and there on the podcast, but maybe not as much, maybe not as proportionally as there are sort of well-loved and adored by people in romance. I had actually never read A Rogue by Any Other Name, so I took this as an excuse to read it. And it was very fun. It's a book about a woman who actually is sort of the cast-off fiancé in an earlier book, in an earlier series. She is supposed to marry a duke, and he is actually in love with someone else. And so, because it's romance, his happy ever after includes someone else. And so it is not the story of her happy ever after, but this one is. So she is, at this point, basically a spinster because she's 28 and unmarried. Mm-hmm. And her father, she's the oldest of five girls, and her failed engagement from like 8 years before has been enough of a scandal that it's causing all of the daughters to have trouble marrying. Two of them have married, the other two are not. But her father kind of gets desperate. And so as part of her dowry, he adds an estate, a sort of much desired estate that he has won via gambling. And it just so happens that the person who most wants this estate is the person who lost it gambling like 16 years before, 15, 16, some number of years before, who also happens to be kind of the childhood sweetheart of Penelope, who is the 28-year-old spinster who now has an estate dowry. So so the way that it all kind of comes together is that Bourne, who is the Marquis, I've always pronounced it wrong, I never know how we're doing it. Let's say Marquis.
That sounds right.
Thank you. So he comes back. His real name is Michael. He kind of comes back to sort of bargain with her father to get him to let her to let Michael marry Penelope. And he finds her sort of just out and about one night, kind of just exploring the estate because she knows she's going to have to get married because this estate is involved now. And she stumbles across him and she's like, oh my gosh, I'm so excited to see you. I haven't seen you in so long. She doesn't realize that he's become like kind of a jerk in the meantime. And so he basically holds her captive overnight so that he can ruin her and demonstrate to her father that they have to get married. He gets better through the course of the book. So they do end up getting married. He runs a gaming hell. And this is the first book in a series of him and the other three owners of this gaming hell. And the whole book is just sort of about her, the two. I mean, obviously, like with any forced marriage, forced proximity, the two of them eventually fall in love. And he decides that the one thing that he wants more than revenge might be her. It's a whole thing. It's very fun. It is more of an enemies. It's like a second chance enemies to lovers romance, which is not always my thing. But his crankiness sort of melts away over the course of the book, which is obviously very compelling. And that is A Rogue by Any Other Name by Sarah McLean, published in 2012. Leap year 2012.
I love that series. I listened to that when I was working at a job where I was basically just like going through the motions every day and didn't really need a whole lot of brain power. So that was when I started listening to audiobooks. And I think I listened to that whole series in a week.
Oh, interesting. I've actually, I want to pick up the next one, but I was, you know, there's always so many books, but it's good to know that it continues to be strong throughout. Cause I've read Sarah McLean. I hadn't read anything in this series. So, I might have to make my way all the way through.
Yeah, it's good stuff. It's good stuff.
All right. What else? What comes next on your list?
Another 2016 release. I can't believe it's been that long because it feels like just yesterday. But I have to go with The Soldier's Scoundrel by Kat Sebastian. This is her first book.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, if you haven't read her first book or books in that first series, I definitely recommend them. I got like an unbound galley of this book. Like it was
interesting.
Someone sent it to me and was like, I think that you would really like this. I was like, okay. And then I devoured it. And you know, this was probably the first Regency, no, it wasn't the first gay Regency that I had read, because I think I had read K.J. Charles before.
Oh, sure.
But it was definitely like very early in that time. I hadn't read, I don't think, anything that featured like middle class characters. One of the main characters is a son of an earl, but he's not a duke. He's not an earl himself. Like, he's a soldier, and he is disabled, and he goes to the scoundrel, who is actually a sort of private investigator type, who works, you know, below board. And so Oliver, the soldier, goes to Jack Turner. This is the first in the Turners series, to get help with a family matter. And it is also kind of enemies to lovers. They do not get along because Oliver is very upstanding and Jack is very not. So the two of them clash at every opportunity. The tension is magical. And then, of course, it is a gay romance set in a time where it was literally illegal to be gay. So there's that level of tension as well, and the way that Kat approaches the concept of just because it wasn't allowed doesn't mean it didn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of creates this amazing community throughout the books about the Turners. Offers up a satisfactory HEA because it's still a romance. And gives you a little bit of mystery and intrigue along the way. Which she continues to excel at into her, like, she has to have written 20 books by now. I don't know. It feels like there's so many Cat's Bastion books.
Yeah, that's why I couldn't believe that her first book was only 8 years ago. Like, that's right. Wild to me.
It's so wild. But yeah, if you need an impetus to begin your Cat's Bastion retrospective, The Soldier Scoundrel, her first book, start from the beginning, work your way through, find all of the holiday shorts and they're like bonus epilogues for all of the family members and all of the couples, and you know, just make your way through. It's great.
Let's also create a Cat Sebastian cinematic universe.
I support this. I support this greatly.
Done. Speaking of authors who deserve a cinematic universe, which is basically all of them that we talk about on the show, but let's talk specifically about Courtney Milan and a book that she wrote in 2016, still a leap year from when Jess just talked about it. And that is a book called Hold Me that I know we've talked about on the show, but it's been a minute and I think it is worth revisiting because it is just lovely. Mm-hmm. I thought as I was going through the books I was picking that I was only picking books that were the first in a series. And then when I was like remaking my list, I was like, oh, that is not correct at all. this one is not. It is number two, but I don't think I've actually ever read the first book in the series. So you are fine.
Oh, you gotta.
I know. I think you told me that the last time I talked about this book. we'll add that one to the TB soon R. TBSR. So this book is called Hold Me. It is it's a little bit of like a You've Got Mail kind of shop around the corner sort of vibe, because it's two people who do not get along in real life, but who don't know that one of them is like one of the main commenters on the other's blog, like in a good way. Not like, it's not like a don't read the comment situation, but if I'm remembering right, the blog is like about the end of the world and what sort of scientific advancements could have stopped like a future apocalypse that is coming. Anyway, it's like very science-based, and Maria, who is one of the main characters, is a scientist. She works in science. She could have a science podcast, unlike me. And so she meets, and she through, I believe, her brother, she meets Jay, who is also works in STEM and is immediately writes Maria off because Maria is incredibly beautiful and very feminine. She is a trans woman, and so she has made a very specific decision about how she wants to represent herself and her body, and he honestly starts the book being pretty sexist and sort of thinking that because Maria presents herself that way, he just discredits her, and she eventually calls him out on it in like a pretty great exchange. But in the meantime, the two of them are like exchanging thoughts on this blog, and like I said, it's got that kind of shop around the corner vibe, and it is I think it's just like a really lovely story of again, I keep telling people that I'm not an enemies to lovers person, and then I keep recommending all of these great books that are enemies to lovers books, and I do think it is, there's much, it like any book that Courtney Milan writes, both characters have pretty extensive, you know, history that they are dealing with. I don't want to call it baggage. It's just, I think that they are well-developed characters who have lives and histories and emotions and experiences that have created them and built them up to be who they are. And I think the character exploration in Courtney Milan's books is always really fantastic. And this one is no exception. And luckily for you, it came out in a leap year. So if you're reading leap year books, you can read Hold Me by Courtney Milan. But maybe you should read Trade Me first, because Jess seems to think so. But it didn't come out in a leap year, Jess.
It didn't come out in a leap year. I know. You can go ahead and read Hold Me First if you're looking to read leap year books, but then read Trade Me, like honestly, because it's fantastic.
On the TV soon are to
On the
be
TV
T
soon
soon
are.
to well I'm gonna come up I'll figure out what that acronym is. All right, do you want to do one more before we do a quick break?
Absolutely. So I know a lot of people who were introduced to Alexis Hall by via Boyfriend Material, or maybe they knew about his work earlier from maybe the Spires books, or some of those. But my introduction to Alexis Hall was through Looking for Group, which also came out in 2016.
I don't even know of this book.
I have no idea how I got, I think I might have gotten it as an ARC, like for some reason. I don't. And it was like, oh, this looks cute. I'll read it. Why not? Because that's what you do,
Of course.
right? And this is, I don't think it's YA. It's like the characters are younger, but I don't think they're teenagers. I think they're like in their early 20s.
So maybe like new adult when that was a thing.
Yeah, new adultish. And it is kind of an epistolary, except via a game. So, I was thinking about this when you were first talking about role playing, because it has not quite the same setup, but a kind of similar thing where there are these two young men who meet through a game, and they a lot of there is a lot of in-game part of the story. Like they're just like talking through the game or playing through the game or some any of those kinds of things. But one of them thinks the other one is a girl when he in fact is not. So they meet and they meet through the game and they get to know each other and decide that they want to meet. And when they do, it's kind of a surprise when one of them is not the girl that the other one was expecting. But he kind of takes it all in stride and is like, I still like this guy. Like, there's nothing different about my feelings. So now they have to deal with sort of being IRL friends and liking each other. And then there's a whole lot of like one of them's worried that the other one spends too much time like basically drowning out their sorrows through playing this game, and there's like some really good sort of mental health stuff going on, and it's a very like sweet book, even though to some people it might feel like there's too much in game in the book. But I thought that it was really well done, and it turned me on to Alexis Hall for the rest of my life.
I mean, sure.
And it's wild that that was 2016 because I could have, like, that one's another one that was like, wasn't that like just a couple of years ago? But no.
Yeah. Try not to think too much about the passage of time. It's alarming.
It is.
It's alarming.
It's very alarming.
Speaking of the passage of time, we have had enough time pass that we should take a little break and we will be right back. All right, enough time has passed that we have returned. My next up is a book called Magnate by Joanna Shoup. I don't know how much, I think this might be the first Joanna Shoup, and I hope I'm pronouncing her name right.
I'm
It's
pretty sure.
Shuppe. This might be the first book of hers that I read. If you are a person who is a Sarah McLean fan, this is her books are kind of in the same. The vibes are similar, I would say. So this one actually is another book that is the first in a series. There's a short novella that happens before called Tycoon, which I actually also read, which is if you are a novella person. Very charming and lovely, and has a lot in common with this book, which is that there is like sort of a cranky male main character who is eventually won over by a female main character. And in the case of Magnate, Lizzie Sloan is the female main character. She is super sharp with stocks. She can, like, pick stocks and, you know, she'd be making money like nobody's business if anyone would let women pick stocks in the late 1880s, which they will not. So she goes to Emmett Kavanaugh, who is a friend of her brother's, who is a self-made millionaire. He grew up in the slums of New York City and moved to Pittsburgh and has now built this like steel empire. And she thinks he is a friend of her brother's. Turns out their relationship is more complicated, as you will find out. And so she says, basically, I want you to kind of invest in and be the front person for my business. I will make you a lot of money, but I am not allowed to do this and no one will take me seriously as a woman, so I need your name on it. And he basically says, okay, but what's in it for me? And she's like, money? And he's like, well, I have a bunch of money. That's not a thing. And so he eventually does, he says, all right, here's $10,000. If you can double it in 3 weeks, I will invest in your company. And he says, and then, like, when you do double it, we will have dinner together. So it's not a huge spoiler to say she does manage to double the money. And then they have dinner together. And because of a few unexpected circumstances, they are caught in a compromising situation. And oh, so no. Once again, they are forced to marry. and they... you know, their marriage is off to a little bit of a bumpy start because he is sort of blackmailed into it and she is sort of forced into it. And so neither of them are all that thrilled to be there because she wasn't, you know, she was always going to marry for love and he does not love her, or does he, Jess? and so you can kind of imagine how things go. In either the acknowledgments or the foreword of this book, Joanna Shoup writes about how she set this book in 1888, I believe, because there was a massive snowstorm in New York that year, which eventually plays pretty heavily into the plot. So I know. I will let you read about all of it and about Emmett's trust problems and whether or not he can overcome them and Lizzie's, you know, stock genius. And it is all very lovely. And like I said, that actually is the first in a series that I have not read all of yet. So that is Magnate by Joanna Shoup, published in 2016.
You know, I have been meaning to read Joanna Shoup forever. I have so many of her books on my Goodreads, like, want to read list. And I have not, and this might be finally the impetus to just pick up a Joanna Shoup book.
You could even start with the novella, which is Tycoon. It's like 100 pages. You'll zip right through it.
All right. I could do that.
What have you read, Jess?
Well, speaking of the Weatherspoon cinematic universe, in 2020... the book Harbor came out. It was the third book in the Beards and Bondage series, but much like many of her books, you can pick it up without having read the previous ones and then go read the previous ones because you'll want more of her writing once you're done. And this is like one, like, you read Rafe and Zenny and Megan when you want something like delightful, and you read the Beards and Bondage books when you want to sob and be anguished and sit in a corner in the dark.
You want to be immersed in angst.
You just want to be completely immersed in that angst. And this one is quite the setup for that. You have three people who were all affected by the same double homicide. You have one whose partner was murdered, and you have a couple whose third was murdered. They were murdered together. So there's that. They don't know what their relationship was, but they assume that those two people were engaged in some kind of relationship outside of their relationships. So they have different methods for grieving. For most of them, it involves not talking to each other. Mm-hmm. But eventually, they sort of come together in their grief and sort of allow each other to process that grief together. And so when it comes to the time where the couple asks her if she wants to be their third, maybe try it out for a weekend on the vineyard, or I think it's Martha's Vineyard, but it might be something else.
One of those somewhere, fancy, like, East Coast locations.
Yeah, one of those beachy East Coast places. Sure. up in New England. see if they work, because they have chemistry. But do they have, like, emotional chemistry as well? So there's a lot going on in this book, but you just keep turning those pages because you can't wait to see what's happening next. And it's intense, and it is part of the Beards and Bondage series, so there's some bondage happening, but there are also beards. Sure. So
otherwise it would be a poorly named series.
It would be. And that is my favorite of those three books. They're all great, but that one just, like, rings you out in the perfect kind of way.
Bring on the cinematic universe.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So I'm going to talk about a book. I don't actually know if we've talked about this one or not. We've talked about this author. The book is Queen Move, and the author is Kennedy Ryan, and the book was published in leap year 2020. And this is another one that I thought I didn't realize. So I have not read. I don't know if you've read this whole series, Jess.
Mm-mm.
I have not. I think when I read this book, I didn't realize it was part of a series. It's part of the All the King's Men series. This is actually book three. The Kingmaker and the Rebel King are the first two books. And take a look on Amazon, because as recently as this week, you could buy both of those books for like $3. Mm. And so that's probably true of other ebook retailers as well, if you prefer not to use Amazon. So maybe take a look if you're interested. But like I said, you can certainly read Queen Move without having read them, because I sure hadn't when I read this book. Mm-hmm. And speaking about being, like, steeped in all the angst, this is a Kennedy Ryan book, so there's a lot of emotions. It is very emotion-heavy, and it sucks you in, because it's been a little while since I read this book, and so I was revisiting it just this afternoon to try to kind of, like, remind myself, make sure I had a handle on it. And it starts with, gosh, maybe like the first 10 or 15% of the book is jumps back in time. So it opens with a prologue. You are at the one of the main characters. You are at her father's funeral. And that's Kimba. And it just happens to be the case that her best friend / first kiss / I'd call it a first love, except that I think it was like 13 when they last saw like they were 13 when they split. He shows up at this funeral, and Ezra is the other main character, and she hasn't seen him again since they were like 13, 15, something like that. And mm-hmm. at this point, they're in their late 30s. And so you just see them kind of reconnect. It's like this astonishing moment. And then the book jumps back in time for like 100 pages or so and gives you like alternating chapters of their childhood and like how close they were and how close their parents were and how the night that they go to this dance and then share their first kiss, something happens between their parents and Ezra's family leaves. They leave Georgia. She does not see him again until this funeral. So that's like, that's just the background of this book. So then you jump into the actual book. Ezra is in a difficult relationship. He is, his relationship is not going great. It is with a woman that he's been with for about 10 years. They have a child together, and she wants an open relationship. He's just kind of he doesn't want that. So he's like, maybe this has just run its course. And Kimba is in this situation where she's found out that she is, she's in her late 30s. She's perimenopausal. So her doctor basically says to her, if you want to have a child, you need to do it soon or else you may not be able to do it. And so all of a sudden she is like very immersed in her career and she's been like focused on trying to get someone elected governor. And she's this high profile political person. And all of a sudden she's like, wait, do I have to sort of set all of that aside and try to focus on my personal life? Do I even want this? I don't know. Can I do it? How do I meet somebody? Like, what am I going to do? Like, how is this going to work? And so they are both in like very complicated emotional places. They reconnect. You can kind of imagine how things sort of go from there. It's all super emotional and complicated, as you can probably understand from a Kennedy Ryan book. But it's incredibly compelling. Her characterization, like her writing, the way that she writes her characters is there's a lot of depth and a lot of emotion, and it feels very real and raw. And it always feels like when you get to a happy ever after in a Kennedy Ryan book that it's incredibly well earned because these people have been through the ringer and they deserve it. So again, that is Queen Move by Kennedy Ryan from 2020.
And if you need to recover from...
which you will. You will.
The absolute mess that you become after reading those two books, might I remind you about, I've talked about this author and this book and this series about Spoiler Alert, which was released in 2020 by Olivia Dade. It's the first in an amazing trilogy of books with amazing covers. This was, like, I knew nothing about this book besides the fact that it was called Spoiler Alert, so I knew it was going to be kind of nerdy. And the cover had a drawn fat woman on it. That was all that I knew. And then I kept hearing more about it and was like, well, I need to read that book.
Yeah, if you can't picture the cover immediately in your mind, it's probably because you haven't seen it.
Right. Right. So this is a very nerdy book, so if you are not nerdy, you might not get as much out of it that I did. But it is about April, who has a very sciencey day job, but she also runs a fan fiction server with her online BFF for this Game of Thrones-like show. And then there's Marcus, who is the star of said Game of Thrones like show, who secretly writes fan fiction for that show and runs a fan fiction server with his online BFF. You see where I'm going with this.
I can see, yeah. But why don't you take us there anyway?
So April takes a chance and posts a photo of herself in some cosplay on Twitter. And of course, the awful people come out. And Marcus is like, you know what? I think she looks great. I would ask her out. Let's go on a date.
Ooh.
Ooh. And they meet, and she knows that he's like not being himself, but she can't really figure out like what's going on. And it comes out that she writes fan fiction, and he's like, wait. But of course he doesn't actually say anything. So he doesn't know, or she doesn't know, that he knows that they're secretly online best friends.
Aww.
And that, like, I will say that I am not the hugest fan of stories with a deception storyline, but I let it go because this book was too good to not finish. Yeah. There are also like interstitials of stories and like chapters from fan fiction and screenplays and like scenes of screenplays and all other things that are just delightful to read in between. And It's just so good. I hated the secrecy, but I loved the couple. Yeah. So, spoiler alert, followed by All the Feels, followed by Shipwrecked. All the Feels, I think, is my favorite in the trilogy. But spoiler alert is the one that came out that year. And you really do need to read spoiler alert before you read the others. This is a must read all three in order to understand any of what's going on.
So helpful, as always. Well, the last one I was going to talk about is also like back in the angsty world. So I think I'm actually going to skip it. We'll talk about it another time. And it's a Rowan Parrish book, so you can imagine. It is heavy. Go through it and figure out which of her books were published in a leap year, and you can probably put it together. But let's end on spoiler alert. Let's end on a lighter, happier, less immersed in angst kind of a note. any parting thoughts before we close out and you start counting down to the greatest book festival in the United States, possibly the world?
I am curious if people have favorites from before 2012 that they would like to share. Yeah. Or if they have favorites that we didn't talk about from leap years, or if there's like something really awesome about leap years that we just don't get. Like, I know Tia Williams thinks a lot about leap years because there's a whole thing about leap day and like magic and stuff in her new book. But what other leap year special romance things do folks think about?
Yeah, that's a great question, because I actually looked at, I think it was Welcome to Temptation by Jennifer Crusie that came out in like maybe 2000, 2004. So I think there are some out there. And as you mentioned, Indigo, of course, there are some out there that are pre-2012, but I'm with you. I would love to know what folks are thinking about, what they are reading about. And as always, you can catch us at oneinromance@bookriot.com. Maybe a little bit less over the course of the next couple of weeks, because I'll be honest, Jess generally does email box duty and she's going to be really busy. So so if it takes us a little while to get back to you, we apologize in advance. Oh, you can also reach us personally. what comes next in the spiel that we've been doing for years? You can reach me on Instagram, and I'm trying to get back on Blue Sky. I kind of fell off of it for a little bit, but both are at Trisha Haley Brown.
And you can find me on Instagram, Jess_is_reading. I am on Blue Sky. I do remember that it exists now. Jess is reading all one word. I try to make sure that if I post something on the other hell site that I do post it on Blue Sky, so you don't miss anything. And I'm still over there. And I'm also on TikTok at Jess_is_reading.
So feel free to message Jess and wish her luck with the big, exciting book festival. Not that she needs it. We are very excited for you, and I hope it goes great. And huge thanks, as always, to our wonderful audio editor, Caitlin Brame. Please do rate and review the podcast. You will help other folks find all of our leap year books and all of our other book recommendations, angsty and otherwise. And I think that's it for us this week.
Yes, I think that is. Happy March and happy reading.